I'm going to talk a little about soil carbon pools and forested riverine landscapes. This is just an example of a flood in Conger National Park in South Carolina where I'm doing my PhD. So basically what I'm going to be talking a lot about is alluvial soil carbon pools. And it's important because, as we know, soil is the largest terrestrial reservoir of carbon. And a lot of that variability in those soil organic carbon pools comes from those freshwater wetland mineral soils, which these fall into. And in another sort of line, biogeochemical and biological processes are also dependent on soil organic carbon. A good example is denitrification and water quality improvement. And so the objectives, this is basically two studies, some that I did in New England for my master's and some that I'm working on right now. And we wanted to quantify soil organic carbon pools in these forest environments, riverine environments, and pretty much assess the spatial trends both within the landscape and at a head-on scale, and hopefully improve our understanding of landscape relationships in these floodplains. And this is just an example of a soil pit from this is in Rhode Island, and you get a lot of these buried surfaces because they're alluvial environments, so they're accreting vertically. And so there's a situation where you buried a previous surface there. So as I said, this is kind of just talking generally about two studies that I've done. So we're working right now in Conger National Park, which is in South Carolina. It's 40 kilometers southeast of Columbia. It's the second youngest national park in the system behind Great Sand Dunes, which is in Colorado. And basically the thing about it is it's about 11,000 hectares of old growth bottomland forest. So it's a fairly unique situation in the southeast. And it's on the upper coastal plain. And it's a very large river system. It drains most of South Carolina. And that's just the picture of the river down there. And then we did some work for my master's in southern New England. It's a little way different, actually. Climatic, vegetation's different. But you'll see here in a minute, the soil organic carbon pools are similar. So we looked at 29 riparian zone pedons from different small watersheds in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. They range basically first to fourth order streams. There's a good example there in the middle here. It's pretty much what they all look pretty similar. This area was glaciated, so it's basically alluvium over outwash kind of soils, and they were all hydric soils that we looked at. Just a little about the method. So pretty standard. We went in the field, sampled to at least a meter, and congregated incrementally with augers, various kinds, depending on the site situations. And in southern New England, we dug soil pits, so you saw some of those pictures. And we took bulk densities and core methods. And then carbon and nitrogen was basically measured using thermal combustion, and the bulk density was used to scale up. So this is Conger National Park. We kind of took a soil map unit approach to sampling. So there's four soil series that are mapped out here. Conger is on the natural levee, just here in the brown. That's a moderately well-drained soil. As you move back in the floodplain, you have somewhat poorly drained hardwood flats, which is Taka here. And then these are chastain soils, which are mineral soils mapped in wetlands. And a sort of unique situation in these Dorovans, which are in green. They're actually histosols and groundwater depressions. And actually, this is 5 kilometers across, so it's pretty big. And these are just the sites that we used in southern New England. They're spread out over Narragansett Bay, Pawcatuck River, Thames River, and these are all just sort of small riparian areas within there. All right, a little about the results, and so this is why I want to give the talk. So this is kind of working on both of these at once and notice some similarities. So on the top here is the data from Conger National Park that we're working on. And so all these are to 1 meter, so organic carbon, megagrams of carbon per hectare. And these are stratified by drainage class, basically. And so you can see the nice drainage effects. And these are the southern New England, and these are some data from other studies, Davis et al. But you see the similar drainage class effects, and so there's the take-home message to 1 meter is there's significantly more soil organic carbon in these riparian situations than the even in this case, these are poorly drained depressional wetlands, so there's significantly more carbon in these things. But the interesting thing is when you break out these hydric alluvial soils, by soil morphology, you can see that there's a significant difference between soils that have buried horizons, like I showed in the first slide, versus those that don't. And in Congaree, there's about 3 times more carbon if you have buried horizons. And in southern New England, there's about 2 times. And so basically these soils with these buried horizons are inflating the mean beyond what they would be if those weren't present. So a natural question that kind of came up is, what are the depth trends or, you know, within these pedons? Where's that carbon in these sort of wetland riverine soils? And so this is 2 different ways of looking at it, just because the studies were different. We had to sort of look at it different ways. But the top here is from southern New England. So this is depth to 1 meter. And this is cumulative proportion of soil organic carbon. And I just broke out, the just as on the last slide, the wetland soils that have the buried horizons are on the bottom. And then these are the ones that do not contain the buried horizons. And what you see is a distinct break. And that, in fact, after 30 centimeters, the soils with buried horizons have about 60% of the carbon still to a meter, which is unusual when you look at, especially in uplands, you get a situation similar to the hydric soils that don't have the buried horizons, where, you know, over 60% of the carbon's in the upper foot. And then this is just another way of looking at it. This is from the work we're doing now in Congaree. So these are all within the floodplain, moderately well-drained, somewhat poorly and poorly drained. And what you end up seeing after 40 centimeters is, and these are comparable to the one-way ANOVA across the groups like this. So you see a break here, significantly more soil organic carbon after 40 centimeters. So it's the same, similar trends with depth to 1 meter in both situations. And so that kind of brought us to another question. And so in the literature, you usually see soil organic carbon pools reported to 1 meter. I'm just kind of wondering how much carbon's below a meter. So we went to 2 meters because operationally defined soils that way. And it's a lot of work. So anyway, this is the raw data here at the top for Congaree. So this is a subset of 5 pedons that we originally sampled 15 per, and we went back and resampled 5 this summer. And so what you see is the top in the black is the upper meter, and then this is the second meter. And so it's about 50-50 split between the two meters. But interestingly, in these poorly drained soils, in these cases, almost 80% of the carbon is below a meter that we measured at 2 meters. And you can get a lot of carbon. That's up to 700 megagrams of carbon per hectare in the poorly drained soils. And so when you aggregate these into means and you kind of look at the proportion, there's no statistical differences, which is basically telling us the second meter is just as important as the first, and that's sort of unique in these alluvial environments. Since this is accreting, you're going to have various levels of carbon within these soils. So we might want to look at quantifying deep soil carbon in these situations. And so there's a lot of future work that we can do sort of along these lines. And so we wanted to start looking at relationships between the alluvial soil carbon pools and watershed factors, so we can kind of predict what we might have with different land use factors as far as soil carbon. And so we did this in southern New England, but our initial correlation analysis showed fairly weak relationships, and we have some additional data that sort of points to legacy sediments, which are formerly deposited sediments from past land use, mostly agriculture, may be having a big role in the soil organic carbon. So current metrics of watershed land use might not be the best way to go. And at Congaree, we're going to start looking at landscape sort of factors like relative elevation, sedimentation, and vegetation composition, and seeing how those affect the soil organic carbon pools. And we also have some new LIDAR data coming out, really high resolution stuff. So perhaps we can better map and separate these soils, since they have drastically different soil carbon storage potential at a landscape level with this LIDAR data. So basically, just a summary. There's significantly more soil organic carbon in the hydric soils in these alluvial environments compared to the non-hydric to a meter. And there's 2 to 3 times more when you have buried horizons in these wetlands. And there's similar trends between southern New England and Congaree National Park. And so it suggests that fluvial processes are playing an important role. And, you know, we're going to look to probably improve our fluvial landscape soil models and try to see if we can tease out where these high-carbon soils are on the floodplains. And that's the boardwalk in Congaree National Park, so pretty cool place. I mentioned it's old growth, so you don't really see many trees like that in the southeast on floodplains, so that's a swamp tupelo. And the Congaree project was funded by USGS and National Park Service, and Southern New England was through the old NRI program at USDA. So I'll take some questions.
Good job, Matt. We have some time for some questions. Questions for Matt? Go ahead.
So what's causing the buried horizons?
Essentially, it's it can be natural. Actually, that one that I showed was a sort of natural storm event. But usually it's, in most cases, especially in southern New England, where you have small watersheds, you have changes in land use, increase in pervious surface. And we have a bunch of data on legacy sediments, so we also know that past land use has played a big part. So basically you change the hydrology, you change the sedimentation rate, and you get these big pulses of basically carbon poor sand or, you know, clay and concrete just drop in, and then it restabilizes with the net primary productivity being incorporated. So you have a nice stable surface, then you have an unstable, and it stabilizes again. So it kind of looks like a water cookie.
And that increases carbon storage to have that mineral sediment?
Yeah, because basically the water table is keeping up with the sediment supply, and so it's staying anaerobic in these wetlands, and so it's being stored for long term.
When you looked at the deeper carbon pools, the ones from 1 meter to 2 meter, did you take bulk density cores with those, or did you just estimate the bulk?
Yeah, we took bulk density. So
it's a lot of work, right?
It's a lot of work. I have a poster later, so you can see the augers we're using.
The soil survey that was done for Congaree.
Yep.
How deep did they typically go when they described the soil there? Do you know?
I'm assuming. They just go to redoxomorphic features. It's broken on drainage class, but it's actually done pretty well. And so, they could do 2 meters, but once you get the drainage class on a floodplain in the 70s, probably it's pretty good.
During the dry season, what's the typical depth to the water table?
Which one? Southern New England or Congaree? Well, this has been a severe drought year, so and I've only been working there for a year. But I'd say in the spring, that's the high water mark, actually. So spring, it can be 10 feet above the soil surface. And by summer, in these wetlands, it can be, this year was about 50 centimeters down. But this is a severe drought year.
Matt, I had a question. You mentioned about the soil survey, and I like the idea of a LIDAR.
Yeah.
I'd like to take that up to New England and see what that could do for ours, because some of the mapping, you know, we're just mapping outwash and don't really see the alluvial.
Well,
how about there? Do you see the alluvial on the soil surveys?
Yeah.
It's so big. Do they do a good job mapping it out?
Yeah, I mean, it's they're all, the soil map that I showed for Congaree, they're all pretty much they're food-pointed soils, so they're recognized as being alluvial, coastal plain soils. And they do a pretty good job, but it's the old style, so it's like the wettest of the wet is mapped. And then you miss, there's large areas of wetlands on the periphery of these really wet sleeves that are definitely wetlands, but they're kind of left out because they're just getting to get some surface water.
Okay, thanks, Matt.